shotglassdigital.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who wouldn't punch a diamond wall once, much less billions of times, Adam Farmer.
We are almost all the way through series 9, and yep, you still get me. You're right, I probably would not have punched that wall a single time. I would have said, creepy old lady with flies, take me now, I'm done. I lose, I don't care what Clara says, I'm this is over.
Maybe instead of leaving the word bird in the sand, he should have left the word shovel in the sand.
See, it's very hindsight is 2020, right? It would have been good if you would have carried that shovel around with him the entire time. Maybe even take a swing or two at the creepy old lady.
So we had talked about last time when we did Face the Raven review. We were like, oh, we weren't going to do this review. We were going to wait until all three episodes aired. Then we were going to do the review then. But, you know, something big happened at the end of Face the Raven. We figured, you know what, let's do an episode.
I know, right? It took us all season to realize that, huh, maybe we should do these two-parters together. And then we get to the end and we're like, oh, snap, these two-parters, we really can't wait. Let's do them all together. Or let's do them one by one.
Yeah, because so, with this one, we were talking, oh, we'll just wait till the next two episodes air. And then we watch Heaven Sent. And we get to the end of that, we're like, oh, that was a pretty big deal. We should probably talk about that too.
Yeah.
So here we are. We were only going to do one episode for the three-part finale. Now I think we're going to do three episodes for the three-part finale.
Hey, you never know. It might be four episodes. We'll see what Hellbent has in store for us.
So, but before we get into our discussion of Heaven Sent, we did want to kind of talk about a couple things that came out, bigger news items. The first being, let's tackle this one first, Peter Jackson.
Yeah, dropping good old PJ into the mix, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a rumor that's been going on now, I think, for a couple seasons. The idea of Peter Jackson eventually directing an episode of Doctor Who. And we know he wants to do it, but then we got a pretty big tease the other day. A YouTube video, I guess, or I don't know if it was YouTube, but I think it made it on YouTube eventually. A video of him just teasing it, then Peter Capaldi happened to be in the video.
Yeah, there's quite a bit going on in there. I mean, he's polishing his Oscars. Capaldi shows up. He mentions that he has something from BBC that needs to be signed. A Dalek shows up. There's a lot going on in there. But, I mean, we as fans, whether you're a fan of Doctor Who or you're a fan of The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit in general, this has taken off like a firestorm, and although nothing, and I repeat, nothing has been confirmed as of yet, everybody is just saying, hey, he's going to do an episode. We finally get him. All he wants is to be paid in a gold Dalek. And if you watch the video, that's a gold Dalek chasing the Doctor. So is that Peter Jackson's already?
Is it gold? I guess it's got gold.
It's accents. Goldish. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't even pick up on that. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. No official announcement. It does seem like they're hinting at it. This could just be him trolling us, you know. He knows that, you know, he's been joking around about it. Maybe this is just Peter Capaldi just happened to be in New Zealand. I think he was vacationing there from what I've gathered from social media. So I think maybe he just happened to be in town. Maybe Peter Jackson was like, hey, it'd be funny if we made this video. Or maybe there's more to it. I guess we'll find out eventually.
I, for one, I'm hoping there's more to it. And if there is more to it, I hope they give him half a series. half a series. Just give it to him. Let him do what he wants with those half a series. I'm excited for what the possibilities could be on this one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Lord of the Rings movies. Hobbit movies, not so much. I did enjoy them, but I didn't enjoy them to the same level as I did the Lord of the Rings movies. But you know, Peter Jackson, just from those movies alone, I'm a fan. So I mean, yeah, sure. Let's see what he can do with Doctor Who. Do I want him to do a half a season? Maybe not. Maybe let's give him one episode, see how he does, and then we'll go from there.
Did your mind at least once go to a Doctor Who full length movie?
With Peter Jackson?
Yeah.
Actually, no.
No?
I know we just talked about this a couple episodes ago about how we'd both eventually like to see a Doctor Who movie on the big screen. But for whatever reason, with all this Peter Jackson stuff, I've just been thinking TV episodes. You know, I guess it would make sense that if he wants to direct some Doctor Who and Doctor Who makes it to the big screen, who better? But, you know, like we discussed before, I think that's probably a ways off.
It's definitely a ways off. I did read an article just here recently from where someone asked Moffat about moving on and if that's hard, if he's found someone to take his place and stuff like that. And there were some interesting comments there about him not having found anybody to take his place yet, and he doesn't want to leave Doctor Who in the lurch. I don't know. It's just interesting timing. Total speculation. Has no basis whatsoever. Probably no. Yeah, there's very little, no possibility that it could ever be true. But what if Peter Jackson just like, hey, I love Doctor Who, I'm just taking it over?
We'll see. But beyond that, there's also been in the news some more information about the new Christmas special that's coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah, we received some promo pics. We received a synopsis. We know what time it's going to be on BBC. They're kind of opening up the floodgates just a little bit to allow some more information to trickle out there.
So, did we get a synopsis?
Yeah, we have a synopsis. You want me to read that for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the synopsis. The title of the episode would be The Husbands of Riversong.
The Husbands of Riversong.
The Husbands of Riversong. It's a fun title. But anyways, the synopsis. It's Christmas Day on a remote human colony, and the Doctor is hiding from Christmas carols in comedy antlers. But when a crashed spaceship calls upon the Doctor for help, he finds himself recruited into Riversong's squad and hurled into a fast and frantic chase across the galaxy. King Hydroflex is furious, and his giant robot bodyguard is out of control and coming for them all. Will Nardole survive? That's a great name. And will Riversong work out who the Doctor is? All will be revealed on a starliner full of galactic supervillains and a destination the Doctor has been avoiding for a very long time.
So first off, I want to point out the terrible naming involved in this.
Hydroflex
and Nardole. I think the title of the episode actually has a really bad name.
Really? I kind of like the title.
The Husbands of Riversong?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just sounds weird to me.
Well,
it's a Christmas special. That sounds like a mid-season episode.
Well, what would you dread most on Christmas, at Christmas dinner? All of your exes showing up to sit down and enjoy Christmas dinner with you. Maybe it's referring to she's been married to all the doctors. I don't know. They're all coming into play.
Well, see, I didn't think about what it could mean beyond the Doctor. I guess if maybe now she's married to someone else and then the Doctor shows up.
Yeah, I mean, how long will it take for Riversong to work out who the Doctor is? So it sounds to me like she has no idea when Capaldi shows up who Capaldi is in the first place, which would be kind of hard to believe, but...
Yeah, it would be kind of hard to believe. So I have a trivia question for you.
Go for it.
Because something that's in the title is the name of the companion, Riversong.
Riversong.
So, okay. Which doesn't happen too often in Doctor Who, that the name of a companion makes it into the title of an episode.
Oh, no.
Can you, or, I mean, I know you're not like a title guy, so maybe this is a question that's not even fair, but I'm curious if you could just give a guess for how many times in the modern series a companion's name has been used in an episode title. If you can name specific episodes, I'll give you bonus points.
First name or last name or all
any name. Part of a companion's name, made it into the title.
So we know Rose.
First episode of the modern series, yes, Rose.
Yes,
is the title.
Are we counting Bad Wolf?
No.
Okay. I can't think of any other ones. I'm just gonna throw out a guess here and say that there's five.
You are correct. There are five, including the husbands of River Song. There are five.
Nice.
So good guess.
So we have at least one per doctor, with one additional thrown in there.
Almost every companion of the modern series has made it into a title.
Really? Who's Martha Jones is missing?
Martha Jones actually made it in.
Oh.
So let's go through them here.
Yeah.
In order.
I'm banking that Donna has at least two.
So Donna hasn't made any.
Oh, snap.
So first episode of first season or first series, Rose. Title is Rose, so that's an obvious one. Let me see. I'm scrolling down here because I didn't know these off the top of my head either. Series 3, episode 1, Smith and Jones.
Oh, okay.
So Martha Jones made it into that title.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the episode where Tennant forgets that he's the doctor.
Correct.
Okay. He's the school teacher, John Smith.
Right. Let's see. Amy's Choice, series 5.
Okay.
Episode 7. And then we get The Wedding of River Song.
Okay.
For this game, we're counting her as a companion. Series 6, episode 13. And that's it up until this.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. The Husbands of River Song, The Wedding of River Song.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought when the title came out. But there are a couple other things before we move on to our review of Heaven Sent. There are a couple more things involved in the Christmas special. They did release a promo pic, I guess, or a number of promo pics, but they also kind of the official poster, which includes something that we've been missing, the Doctor's Sonic.
Yeah, that is huge.
The Sonic is huge?
Yeah, the return of the Sonic, I feel, is fairly large, especially if it comes without, like, there's no explanation for why it's back. It's just going to be really surprising.
I think, well, we've gotten in the past where the TARDIS literally just pops it out.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm guessing that that's what we're going to get with this. I don't think it's going to be any kind of special thing where he finds it or it's gifted to him. I think
the TARDIS has had enough of the sunglasses.
Yeah, maybe the TARDIS is just like, hey, maybe you should use this again because those sunglasses look really stupid.
we are missing the TARDIS. We didn't see it in this last episode. I'm curious of how it's going to get to where the Doctor ends up in the last episode. I wonder if something happens to the TARDIS.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I guess it's kind of open. We could get a new TARDIS console. I feel like we've gotten that a lot. So maybe, I don't know. I'd be curious to see if this last episode ties into the Christmas special at all, or if the Christmas special is kind of a standalone. I know for the most part, Christmas specials have been standalones, with the exception of the Matt Smith, you know, Christmas Town one that kind of tied in to the bigger picture.
And I mean, in a way, the Dream Crabs did. It played off of what happened to Clara at the end of the season, and then it kind of picked it up for a few aspects of it.
Well, she kind of went away at the end of the season, kind of like they went their own separate ways.
Yeah.
And then at the beginning of the Christmas special, she wakes up in a room to Santa Claus and gets right back into the game. So, yeah, I mean, sure, you could say it kind of ties in, but there's not any, other than that, there's really no direct tie-in. It could be a complete standalone episode.
Right.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. I think I'm happy to see River back. I think what we should do is we should go back and watch all the River Song episodes
in order of timeline,
in order of air date.
Air date.
Yeah. So start with, Silence in the Library stuff, which I actually recently have gone back and rewatched, and then kind of go through. I think that would make our appreciation of this Christmas special even more, to kind of remember that backstory. But I did notice today on iTunes, when I went to purchase Heaven Sent so I could rewatch it and actually read the subtitles, that there is something on iTunes right now that you can watch. I think it's called like The History of River Song. And it's actually, I think, based on the title, them giving a little bit of a back, you know, kind of a reminder of like, hey, this is what we know so far about this character before the Christmas special comes out.
Huh.
I think it's free.
I have not seen that just yet.
If you have iTunes, check it out. It's already available, so you can watch it now and prepare for the Christmas special.
I'm looking through my season pass right now to see if they've tossed it in there. They probably didn't, because they always do the season pass separate.
Yeah, it is a separate season pass for the Christmas special, and it actually is $4.99 for the HD version.
For the Christmas special?
Yes.
Oh, wow, that's... actually surprised. Okay,
cool. That it's that cheap.
Yeah
usually in the past they've been like $8, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think maybe they realized people didn't like getting ripped off
for a single episode.
Suddenly you're charging them like quadruple the price.
They do usually throw in like one or two extra things with it, but still not, it's not always like, it doesn't make you feel good. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, so yep, Christmas special's coming up. Christmas is coming up.
And this is going to be the shortest break that we have between the end of the season and the Christmas special, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that it is the shortest that we'll have to wait between the end of the series and the Christmas special.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem... Yeah, you're right. It'll only be a couple weeks. So yeah. I know in the past, you know, the series would end and we'd be like, ah, oh, now we got to wait till the Christmas special. But yeah, it's just going to be a couple weeks, and then we got to wait until who knows when, next October or next November.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
So, but yeah, we're kind of leading up to the end of the season. We are on episode 11 of 12. I think the term is penultimate. Is that right? I always hear that term thrown around. Like for the episode before the finale, I think it's called the penultimate episode. But did you know, here's some more trivia for you, that every penultimate episode in Moffat's era has included the Cybermen up until now? This is the first time it hasn't.
We do have wires connected to his head. Is that close?
Nope.
Wait a second, because technically this isn't... Well, I guess it's the episode before the last, but Face the Raven was the first episode of the finale, and that did include the Cybermen.
Right, but that would not be considered the penultimate episode, because it's not the episode.
You keep saying that word. I don't think that word means what you think that means.
I think it does. Google it. So, yeah, we got this episode. Let's talk about it. There's a lot to talk about. I think... Well, let's say this right out. Me and you watched this together.
We did watch this together.
We've podcasted about Doctor Who now. I think we're basically past 2 years now, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We're creeping up on 50 episodes, and we have never been in the same room and watched a Doctor Who episode together. Is that an accurate statement?
That is an accurate statement. But we've never watched Doctor Who. We've talked a lot of Doctor Who, but we've never watched the show together.
But that just happened because you were in town for the holidays. We were supposed to hang out. You tried to get out of it. I was like, no, you're not getting out of it. Come on over to my house. We're going to watch this episode together. And we did. And I think based on your reaction, based on my reaction, I think we might get into a couple battles tonight.
There's a slight division between us. That is undeniable.
I think we both liked the episode. So that's fair to say. We both liked it. But I think there are some problems that I see that you don't necessarily see. So we'll get to those as we go through the review, I think.
I'm looking forward to it because I think I might be able to persuade you that there really aren't very many inconsistencies here.
All right, I hope you can prove me wrong. But something we forgot to do in our excitement of reviewing Face the Raven, we actually didn't do the whole stats thing. So let's do that. This was written by Stephen Moffat, director Rachel Talalay, and it's story number, they're saying it's story number 260A, which is kind of odd to me because I thought this was a second part of a finale, which would
be... Yeah, this would be 260B.
But maybe the numbering is saying that Face the Raven was a separate story, which I could buy.
Yeah, because I could totally see
it that. Really does stand alone. And this one does seem to tie in, you know, based on the way it ended and what we know by the preview of the next episode, it's kind of one big story, those two episodes. So I can buy it as a separate story. Yeah, so we're season 9, episode 11. And we get that one that we've been talking about, you know, the doctor's kind of alone. Although not technically, we did get, we got Clara briefly. And we also got a little child at the end briefly. So
yeah.
Not 100% Capaldi alone, but for the most part, Capaldi does this episode all on his own.
Yeah, for the most part, he's alone. Like you said, we have Claire showing up. We have the kid at the end. But then we also have the thing that's chasing him the entire time, which, although the doctor was by himself, I never felt like he really was alone. And Capaldi did... a fantastic job of carrying the entire story himself. Every part of how Capaldi, approached this episode just felt perfect.
So as we're reviewing this episode, I'm thinking back to the story, and I'm realizing there's really not much to it. So, you know, going through this kind of story point by story point would be kind of pointless. There's a lot of it's repetitive. But there are some big things that happen. But I think for the most part, I just have questions. You know, I have a lot of questions. And I know we watched this together, but I think we were both, you know, after it ended, we didn't really talk much. You know, we talked a little bit about it, but I know we were having some audio issues. We watched it kind of in a big group of people. The sound was kind of off, it seemed like, so we couldn't really hear everything the doctor was saying. So I know since then we've both gone back, rewatched it with subtitles on, so we made sure we caught every word. I think our discussion now can be better than it was directly after the episode, but
yeah, definitely.
I think I have a lot of questions about why certain things, what does this mean? I want to know your theory on what, you know, how the ending is like, what does that mean? So yeah, I think I'm just going to start asking you questions and that's the way we're going to review this.
before we jump in though, like you say that there's not much story there. I think there's an incredible amount of story there. Just the way that it's written, the way that we watch it, the way that it takes place in front of our eyes on the TV screen, there's the story's not really revealed until the end. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about this episode is that you really have very little information of what's going on and it's slowly unveiling itself. The doctor is slowly revealing more and more information as he thinks through it himself. That at the end, all of a sudden you get the immensity of what has just taken place, what you've just watched. And you can probably guess by the way that I'm talking about it, that I really loved the way that this all went down. But yeah, go ahead, start shooting.
I think when I say I didn't really mean there's not much story to it. I just meant there's not much to it. Kind of saying you could sum up the story in a couple sentences. Really. You know, the doctor teleports to a castle. He runs away from a monster, realizes that he can copy himself, and then he ends up on Gallifrey. Like there's not like, you know, going through, there's not like a big progression of the story. Cause once he figures out what's going on, then they spend how much time just showing us him redoing it.
5 minutes, five minutes of him redoing it.
Yeah. So
I timed it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Starting at 7 minutes, 7 minutes and 14 seconds left in the episode is when everything finally clicks for him and he realizes what's going on. And then up until 2 minutes, we see it just replay, replay, replay. And then the last 2 minutes of the episode, which about 30 seconds of that is the credits rolling. So for the last minute and a half is him on Gallifrey with the little boy.
So the very beginning of this episode actually starts with a really cool speech by the Doctor. We just hear his voice talking about, you know, when you're born into the world, you bring something with you. It's always chasing you. You're running, but it's walking. But
if you slow down for too long, or if you take slip, too long of a nap, you'll wake up and you'll see an extra shadow behind you, and that's the end.
Yeah, like, it was cool. Like, I like that little speech at the beginning. It was so poetic that I almost wondered if it was from something.
Yeah.
Rather than just being original to this episode, I think it was just original to the episode. Yeah. But it did seem very poetic, like something that was taken from a book, which I thought, wow, if that was really something that was taken from a book and Moffat made a whole episode around it, that would be really cool. But I don't think that's the case. So that was cool. Cool way to start it. But it does start out where it shows us a bloody hand pulling a lever, and then like disappearing.
Yeah.
Like, and then the Doctor appears in a tube, you know, being teleported there, you know, by me. But they kind of just tipped us off right from the beginning.
Yeah. And I don't know what happened when we watched it the first time. I totally missed it. I don't remember seeing that at the beginning. And if I did see it at the beginning, it was just one of those things that like you brush away until you either rewatch it or you get to the end and it's like, oh snap. They basically told us the entire story right there.
Right. And I think I do remember seeing it, but it didn't really mean a lot to me because it was just, everything was such a mystery. So I see a bloody hand and I'm not really thinking much of it. I'm not even thinking it's the Doctor's hand, you know?
Right. Exactly.
So, but yeah, then once you go back and rewatch it, you're like, oh, wow, they gave us a huge clue right at the beginning. And we were just all distracted enough, I think, to really notice it. Now, yeah,
because you couple that with what he's saying, and you have the entire story there. You have him running from something that's walking after him, and then you see his bloody hand.
Right. So we didn't catch that hint. But as the episode progresses, at what point did you realize kind of what was going on? Did you realize it before the Doctor realized it? What tipped you off?
I think, and this even stuck out to me when we were watching it together. I think the first moment where I thought, oh snap, this isn't the first time that he's experiencing this, is when he jumps into the water for the first time, and then, or the first time we see, and then he comes out to find things by the fireplace. I think that's the first time that I realized this isn't the first time this has happened.
Okay, so we're in the same boat. That's exactly when I started to think. Now, I didn't have the whole thing figured out in my brain, but I did start to go down that path of, oh, wait, he's done this before.
Yeah, he's not alone. We have one of those loops that I feel like we've seen before in Doctor Who, where the bootstrap paradox, right?
This is actually one of my biggest issues with this episode, where this is your first chance to explain something away that I think is a pretty big mistake. Why are the Doctor's clothes there if the rooms reset themselves? And because they are there, why didn't they stack up like the skulls did? Shouldn't that room be full of Doctor's clothes?
Yeah, so great, great point. I thought of that not only in that instance, but also, I mean, we have the pivotal bird written in the sand, right? Another instance of the rooms are supposed to reset themselves, automated room service, what have you. The one thing that sticks out to me is that they never said how long it takes for those rooms to reset. And they never said that every room resets at the exact same rate. Because when the Doctor dies and he writes bird in the sand towards the end, we see all the footprints, all the blood cleaned up from the hallway, but it doesn't clean up the bird in the sand. So it seems to indicate that not everything happens at the exact same point in time. So I don't know. That's how I'm approaching it in my mind, is that although we know the rooms reset, things happen, things get cleaned up, what have you. And they say that it happens after a period of time. We're never given the definite, it always happens after a certain period of time. We're never given, it always happens at the exact same rate for every room. So that's kind of what I'm thinking of in my mind. I could be totally off. Like you said, that could be one of those plot holes that I'm just fanboying over. But that's my explanation.
And it's not really that big a deal, even if they did miss that detail. But it did kind of stick out to me. Now, to kind of push back on your theory, it's either explained one way or the other. Because if the room did reset, then the clothes would be gone. The fact that the clothes are there means that room does not reset, no matter at what rate. So because it doesn't reset, or doesn't reset fast enough, then the doctor's clothes would continue to appear.
Well, it doesn't reset. How does he put it? If I don't visit the room after a certain amount of time, it resets. Perhaps the reset time for that room is longer than it takes for the doctor to revisit it again.
Right.
So there's clothes
there. So he only ever has one pair.
Yeah, he has two pairs. When the first time that he goes through, he... Never mind. Because how would the clothes get there in the first place?
I mean,
so you're right. There are clothes there in the first place. No, the clothes are there in the first place. That's the only explanation. There's already a set of clothes there in the first place. Similar to how there's a picture of Clara. The clothes are there.
He didn't put the picture there.
Yeah.
Okay, and that makes sense, because we know who's controlling this whole thing are the Time Lords. So
right.
They could easily have put a pair of clothes there kind of to start with. So every time that room resets, it actually resets with a pair of clothes.
Yeah. I don't know why they'd put clothes there.
All right. Okay. I could buy that. I still think it's just something that they didn't think about. But if we want to, we want to explain it away, you did explain it away. I like
Where'd
the
I get
idea.
This cup of tea? Where did I get this cup of tea? I'm the doctor. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Yeah, right. So I do like the idea of the rooms. Maybe they don't all reset at the same rate, because that would explain why the blood stains were gone, but the bird thing stayed. Because bird, and the way I thought of it too was he literally writes bird in the sand right before he dies.
Yeah.
And then he teleports back in seconds later. So right. He obviously didn't leave the room long enough for it to reset. But then he pretty soon goes out into that hallway and the blood's gone.
Yeah.
So the hallway does reset. So yeah, maybe the idea of them resetting at different rates.
And who knows how long he's out of that teleport room, because it seems like he's in the castle for quite a long time as he's typing things out and he's talking about hours and minutes and stuff. He's timing everything he does. And I don't know how long he's running around the castle until he goes back to the teleport room.
Right. I think there's a big detail that I don't know if it'll ever be revealed. I don't know if it's just going to be up to fan speculation, but there is one big detail that when or if it's confirmed will make me either like this episode or not like this episode. But we'll get to that later.
Oh man, now I really want to know what it is. I want to know if I can like this episode or not.
I think you're going to like it either way. So we get kind of the monster. It's called the Veil. I'm not sure why we gave it a name, because it's not really a monster. It's just something from the doctor's, I guess, past that he remembers, some nightmare that was plucked from his brain. He never called it the Veil. Nobody ever referred to it as the Veil, so I'm not sure why it has a name.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is that he says that there was an old lady that died, and even though it was a hot summer day, and even though they wrapped her in veils, flies still came.
Yeah.
So
creepy monster. I liked the idea of it. It looked creepy. The fact that the hands, obviously the lady that he saw in the sheets didn't have those kind of hands, I wouldn't think. So, you know, they definitely amped it up a little bit. But, yeah, super creepy. The doctor either seemed really afraid of it or not afraid of it at all, depending on what part of the castle he was in.
Right.
But, yeah, that was – I liked it. Good design.
I would say, and I'm just tossing this out there, this is the first original monster slash villain slash nightmare creature of, like, since the weeping – eh, I don't know. The Whispermen were pretty freaky. But that literally had me like, oh wow, this is really good. Like, I really like this. It moved at a slow pace, but yet it was unstoppable. It always came for you. And then the flies were like the precursor, right? And there's nothing worse than being surrounded by flies, and all of a sudden they would just be there, and it's like, oh snap, it's close. I really liked it. I'm kind of bummed that it's over, right? Kind of like the Whispermen. Like, anytime we get something really good, it's only a one episode thing and then it's gone.
I think this is something that could come back. I mean, they're associating it to Gallifrey. It's obviously something in the Doctor's head, so who's to say, you know, this type of thing isn't used against him again?
Yeah, but the thing is that it's only the Doctor. That's the thing. Like, it could be something totally different for someone else. And maybe that concept is used, like your worst fears, which they kind of did with the God Complex. You open up the door and your worst fear was there waiting for you in the hotel.
There was a couple of God Complex parallels with kind of what you just explained, the idea of there being a numbered room.
Yeah, numbered doors, right? And he was looking for 12. Smith was looking for 11.
Yeah, so that there were definitely some parallels there. So the idea of the Doctor, okay, so the Doctor, anytime that he kind of had to stop and think, you know, he's about to get whatever, and so he's like, okay, I'm going to go into my mind palace,
you say? I would totally call it the mind palace. Thank you, Moffat and Sherlock crossover.
Yeah. What'd you think about that? I think it totally changes the way I think about certain episodes of Doctor Who now that I look back, where we've had episodes in the past where the Doctor's kind of by himself in the TARDIS talking to himself, writing on a chalkboard. Are we to think now that maybe all of those, not all of those times, but at least some of those times, the Doctor was just in his own brain?
Right. And you mentioned this when we watched it together, and I'm totally with you there. You can go back through at least Capaldi's, and every time he's talking to himself or every time he's in the TARDIS by himself, you can have those exact same, I don't know, you can see it the exact same way. And it was interesting because after this episode was out, just reading through a few things here and there around the internet on different fan sites and what have you, others were saying the exact same thing. And like in a good way, like you can now go back and rewatch episodes and try to decide, is he doing the exact same thing here? Is this all just taking place in his head? It's really cool. And a throwback to The Witch's Familiar, where Missy is talking to Clara about how the Doctor got out of the one situation with the robots that were going to shoot him, and the whole idea of he always assumes he's going to win. Pretty much the exact same thing happens there, right? Time slows down. We don't get to see inside the Doctor's head. But now that we know what goes on inside the Doctor's head of, like, he always assumes he's going to win. He's having these conversations with himself. He slows down time in his mind. We can assume that's taken place back there as well.
And we can go as far back as last season, right?
Listen, right?
He has the whole like monologue where he's talking, writing on the chalkboard. And then we have this season where he's talking about Beethoven.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's at least one other time, but yeah, so it kind of makes sense. And now, it makes me wonder if it's something that Moffat kind of had planned all along to reveal. And he's kind of waiting till this episode to reveal it, but you know, all along he's intended for that to be kind of the Doctor's mind palace.
Yeah, I like it. If Moffat wants to do it, go for it. And it was so cool because as he hits the water and he makes the statement of like, likelihood of maintaining consciousness or whatever. And then he hits the water and loses consciousness, and all the lights of the TARDIS go off.
Yeah.
And then it slowly starts to reboot. And then it does the exact same thing when he gets touched by the veil and he starts to die. Everything shuts off, and then it slowly starts to reboot. It was just a cool visual effect that they did with the TARDIS in this episode.
So we have a scene where the Doctor opens the door telepathically. Which, actually, if you think about the idea of the Doctor snapping his fingers and the TARDIS door opens,
yeah,
that totally makes sense.
Definitely.
But it does seem like he is kind of not able to do it, and he's like, oh man, back when I was a kid, you know, I had more telepathic abilities. So what did you think about the whole idea of the Doctor being able to do that? Was it kind of silly? Are you cool with that? Do you think it adds some back, you know, story to his lore? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I thought it was, I don't know, to me it was just one of those quirky things that the Doctor does, and then you just kind of accept it. That's kind of how it was for me. I like that you brought up the snapping your fingers and the door opens. And then now that we kind of, I don't know, now that it's been revealed where he was the entire time, I'm, it kind of puts a different nuance on it myself, like, or for me, because so much of it is already taking place in his mind with the veil showing up and the flies and all of that. I can't help but wonder if the Doctor just hacked it there and didn't even realize it. Does that make sense?
It like makes sense, and it actually is starting to tread on the ground that is the big thing for me, the big issue. So we're not there yet. Let's wait. I'm saving that for the end. But there is a little bit of precedence for this other than the snapping of the fingers, because our favorite companion, Susan, who is also apparently a Time Lord, speaks of the ability to, or the fact that she was telepathic. So, and she was obviously a lot younger than the Doctor. So maybe Time Lords, when they're younger, have like a stronger telepathic ability, and then as they age, they lose it, which would kind of make sense if you want to go that far back into Doctor Who lore. So, another fun fact.
I'll take that.
Okay, I'll take it too. I didn't mind it. So I guess kind of just to give a summary, or, you know, kind of a brief overview of the point of the, not the point of it, but kind of what was happening. The Doctor is running from this monster. The monster, every time it would kind of catch up to him and almost kill him, he had to confess something to stop it, right?
Right.
Okay. And then when he did confess it, at least this is the way it seemed to work, he would confess it. The monster would literally stop in its tracks, and then the castle would kind of do a whole reset, rotate thing, and then in some instances, the Doctor would just appear somewhere else in the castle. Didn't seem to be consistent, though.
Right.
Okay. And the Doctor only ever really had to confess two things. He confessed that he was afraid, which I didn't really think was fair, because he's done that before. It's not like the first time the Doctor's confessed he's afraid, and I thought the whole rule was that he was supposed to be confessing things that he hadn't confessed before.
Maybe he had never admitted that he was afraid of that veil thing.
Okay.
And he said he was afraid to die, which even in the first episode, was it the first or the second? The first episode where he meets Colony Seraph, he wasn't really afraid to die there. He was ready to die.
Okay. So he admits he's afraid, and then the second time he had to admit something, he admits that he left Gallifrey not because he was bored, but because he was afraid.
Because he was scared.
Seemed to be a theme. And they seem to be okay with that as an answer. And then that's pretty much it. He only really ever had to confess those two things, and he was very stubborn about the last thing he didn't want to confess. Which is another, I forgot about this being another big issue I had with the episode.
Well, he confessed three things, because he confessed once when he first gets there, once in the grave looking thing.
Yeah.
Which that one was interesting, because he confessed he confessed that he didn't leave Gallifrey because he was bored. And then he was like, oh, is that not enough for you? Because it kept on moving forward. So it seemed like it was looking for something specific. So he confessed the other part of it. And then the third time is when he was at the very top of the tower. And he had already found door 12.
And he confessed he knew what the hybrid was. Got it. And then the thing he was so stubborn about was that he was not going to confess any more details about the hybrid because that was too big of a secret.
Correct.
Okay. So the monster, the idea of the doctor timing the monster, and he was kind of like, okay, I figured out how long I have. If I run from one side of the castle to the other, then I can basically buy myself 82 minutes and get some stuff done in that time before it catches up to me. So he's acting like this veil thing lives by rules, right? But it doesn't really live by rules because it literally appeared out of the side of a grave. Like, in my mind, that thing could be anywhere it wants to be because it never came back out of that door. And if it did, the doctor would have seen it burrowing itself into the side of the dirt, right?
Right.
I will admit that was a very creepy, like, you know,
it's a jump scare.
A
total jump scare, yeah.
But it doesn't really go into the rules of what, you know, had been happening in the episode so far. So I wanted to call that out as well.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. That is one of those ones that even as I rewatched it, was like, huh, how did that happen?
How did he get in the dirt? Which I think when we get to my big issue with the episode, or not even issue, but just my biggest question, I think it might explain all of this stuff away. But before I get to that one, I have a smaller thing. So we get to the point where the doctor finds door number 12. He does his last confession. He gets the thing to rotate. He gets in the door. And then he finds this diamond wall. Actually, it's not made out of diamond. It's made out of something that's 400 times harder than diamonds.
Adamantium. Wait, no.
So it, in the subtitles, it was called Spantium, but I swear in the TARDIS wiki, it's something else.
Yeah, I've seen a couple things thrown out there for what it's called.
What was it called?
It's like, it starts with a B, right?
Asbantium.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so in the subtitles, it said Spantium, but I think it's actually called Asbantium.
See, the one is like the scientific term and the other one is what you use on the street.
Yeah.
When you're looking to purchase it somewhere in an alley. Somewhere.
I need an ounce of Spantium.
One is what Riggsy would refer to it as.
Yeah, so he gets to this diamond wall. And then I think that's when things start to really click with him, right?
Right.
Where he starts to figure it out.
It was one of those moments where he even says, why do I always remember at this point? And it's like everything starts flooding back. Not only what's happening right now that's making sense, but everything that's come before it starts to come back to him as well. Because there's later in the episode that says he remembers all of it. Well, no, at that point when he goes back into his mind palace and he's fighting with Clara, He's like, I remember all of it, every one of them, and it you never go away, essentially.
So he remembers everything?
At that point, I think everything comes flooding back to him, yes.
But only when he gets to the diamond wall.
Only when he gets to the diamond wall. Then finally then everything clicks. All. He remembers what bird means. He remembers everything. And it's one of those... I don't know. I've been in a similar situation where, like, I'll say, oh, I need to do something, and then I'll totally forget about it until something else triggers that thought, and then it's like, oh, snap, and all my memories or all my thoughts leading up to that finally come rushing back.
Right. And so it kind of, you know, he's telling this story that involves a bird. It's kind of fitting to what's happening. You know, he's punching the diamond wall. And if enough time passes, he's going to wear that thing away until he finds his way to what he thinks is going to be the TARDIS waiting on the other side.
Yeah.
But it ends up being Gallifrey. But we get this montage of him punching. It was painful to watch. Him punching this wall and then kind of doing everything over again and punching again. And then as he gets further into the wall, he has more time, so he's able to tell more of the story.
Yeah.
Because he gets to be further away from the veil. I thought that was kind of cool. It's definitely unique storytelling. But once he gets to the other side, he finds himself on Gallifrey. And that's kind of where we get the big reveal, you know. Well, the big reveal that he's on Gallifrey, but then also the fact that he was basically inside of his confession dial the whole time.
Yeah.
So, issue number one. Issue number whatever, but out of these two. okay, so he literally spent billions of years in this place because he was protecting the secret of the hybrid. But within minutes of him being on Gallifrey, he reveals the secret of the hybrid. Why?
Yeah, so I've kind of gone back and forth in my mind as to what happens there. And I'm wondering, and this, I could be totally off base, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I want to know when he realizes what the hybrid is. I don't think he really knows what the hybrid is when he's inside the confession dial. I think he thinks he knows what the hybrid is because of everything that has come in the series up to this point. I think he thinks he's pinpointed who and what the hybrid is from just all the mentions of it over the season. And it isn't until he sees how angry he's become to live 2 billion years to break out of the confession dial himself that he then realizes, snap, I'm on Gallifrey. I'm the hybrid. I think that's what happens. And once he's out of it, he's like, you know what? Screw everything. There's no one else to protect. I'm burning this place to the ground.
Okay.
That's my theory.
I mean, I'd be pretty angry too if I just spent 2 billion years protecting a secret that was not even accurate. But I don't know if I buy your theory there. Because he seems pretty convinced that he knows exactly what the hybrid is. And I think the secret that he was trying to keep was the fact that he was the hybrid.
I don't know, because...
But then he willingly just gives it up as soon as he gets to Gallifrey. And maybe you're right as far as the whole idea. He thought he was fighting his way to the TARDIS. He ends up finding Gallifrey and being like, what the hell? Like, not expecting that. And then he's just like, screw it. I just spent billions of years protecting a secret only to find that I'm on Gallifrey. You know, I'm just going to tell him. And then he tells him.
And the thing is that he didn't know where he was, right? He didn't know who put him inside that confession dial. He didn't know what they wanted, ultimately what they wanted. It wasn't until later that he figured out what they wanted him to confess. But he didn't know who it was that was torturing him. He called it a torture chamber multiple times for 2 billion years. At the end of it, now that he's on Gallifrey, I don't know. I still wonder if he truly knew who the hybrid was. Why was it that he knew who the hybrid was and nobody else knows? I don't know if he knew. He probably thought he knew just because of all the times that it's come up this series. But then it confirmed in his mind after he got out, nope, I hate this place. I'm going to stand in its ruins. I'm the hybrid.
So do you think there's a chance that maybe the doctor's just lying? He knows he's not the hybrid, but he's just saying that because he knows whoever on Gallifrey is listening. And so he's like, I'm just going to say this kind of as a misdirect.
I there's always a possibility, you know, with Moffat, anything is possible. I think, though, that because he wants to destroy Gallifrey at this point, after he comes out and realizes that it's Time Lords that have kept him in there for so long, I think that since he wants to destroy Gallifrey, he's just calling himself the hybrid.
Well, let's hope that he doesn't actually want to destroy Gallifrey. Maybe he just wants to destroy the people that are responsible for what happened. He's using the idea of like Gallifrey being in ruins kind of metaphorically.
He's already destroyed it once, right?
Well, that's the whole point. The whole point of the 50th anniversary was that all the doctors got together to save Gallifrey.
But this is only totally to have Capaldi
come later on and destroy it again? No. Like, that's just ridiculous. That's like saying that Luke Skywalker is going to be the dark side user in The Force Awakens. No.
You know what I like, though? You build up
that type of a story only to tear it down.
You know what I like, though? It kind of highlights the inevitability of things that are predetermined. He thought he saved it, and it would be amazing if in the end he destroyed it anyways.
Huh. I can't disagree with you there. If they do turn it around and say, you know what, you know, we made you guys all happy and think that Gallifrey was saved in the 50th anniversary, Smith and Tennant, your favorite doctors got together to save Gallifrey, only to have, you know, mean old Capaldi come along and make it happen anyways.
And you know what?
That would actually be kind of cool.
that's exactly what happens with his shielder that comes back and bites him, right? He thinks he's doing something good. He thinks, I can change time. He does it, and it ultimately destroys him. Well, it does major damage to him in the end. Maybe that's the same thing with Gallifrey. He's already saved it, and it's already come back to bite him. Just wipe it out. You can't avoid it. It was a bad decision to save it. And Capaldi's a totally different doctor. He's a totally different doctor than Tennant and Smith and the War Doctor. He's disconnected. We already saw him stand in the doorway and just watch Claire die. And like you said, when we were together, just leave her in the street, right? He doesn't do anything about it. He's detached. He's ready for this to be over.
Well, he's definitely not detached from Claire. He's still thinking about her for billions of years. I think he had more of an attachment to her than we gave him credit for, apparently.
Gave him credit for. Started to see glimpses of it.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna play humble on that one. I think I called that pretty good.
I was just seeing what I wanted to see. Like, come on. Really, Clara? but, yeah. So, okay. So this is my big question. And there's other things that we probably skipped over. So we can go back to other things if there's anything that I'm not thinking of right now. But my big question is, do you think that what we saw happen to the Doctor, him going through this literally billions of years, did that really happen to the Doctor? Or was it all kind of this game that was in his head that he had to kind of find his way through? And for all we know, he could have only been in there for 5 minutes.
I'm going to say yes to both.
Okay.
I think that he really did spend 2 billion years inside that thing, but it's kind of like one of those cup of soup moments. Although it was 5 billion or 2 billion years for him, it probably was only a short period of time outside.
Okay. So
timey-wimey.
Maybe to get a little bit more detailed with the question, do you think that everything that was happening existed? Do you think there was an actual castle? Do you think there was a teleporter, that there was an actual wall that he was punching through?
For him, yes.
Okay, but in his brain, are you saying that you think it was kind of a mental thing?
Or No, I'm saying that he was
physically going through these things.
I'm saying that he was physically going through it, though there was probably a very strong mental link to it as well. But I'd say he physically went through it. But the concept of time within the confession dial was totally different than the concept of time outside of the confession dial.
Huh. Okay. So in your mind, the Doctor is over 2 billion years old now.
Technically, yes. But in reality, no.
Okay. So for me to digest this episode, I have to believe that it was all in his mind and that it's something he didn't actually experience.
How?
Like, okay, so the confession dial, to me, it was a puzzle that he had to solve, and that the Time Lords, however, I don't know how it would be explained, but there was some sort of a mental thing that was going on that was not, it was almost like you dream something, you know, you right. might fall asleep and dream that you go through something. Like, I've had very vivid dreams that seem like I was literally living another life. And right. when I wake up, and it seems like all this time passed, and there was even things in that dream that meant something to me. And suddenly all those things are gone because I wake up and I'm in my real life. And only, you know, however many hours that I've been asleep has passed. But in that dream state, it felt like much more time had passed. But none of those things that I went through in that dream actually happened. I remember them, but they didn't actually happen. That's how I think that this is with the Doctor. He had to go through this. they were controlling his mind in a way that they were trying to get him to confess these things. And then he was kind of fighting his way out of the dream, quote, dream. And then he, you know, figured out a way to kind of get through it without having to confess. That's kind of how I see it. I feel like there's evidence to back me up, as far as just some of the things that were happening that wouldn't really make sense in real life. And you can explain things away in dreams. You know, things happen in dreams that don't make any sense. The fact that they're, you know, we were trying to explain away the clothes. We're trying to explain why the monster could show up in the side of a dirt pile. You know, these are things that we don't have to explain away if it was a dream.
Right. I totally get where you're coming from. The one thing that just hit me about the monster showing up in the dirt pile is that at the end, after the monster grabs Capaldi's face and burns him, it teleports out, right? It just disappears and goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it could have totally just teleported into the dirt pile.
Oh yeah, that's what I was kind of saying before. It doesn't really follow its own rules as far as taking 82 minutes to walk across the castle when it can just teleport.
Right. The one thing though that I would probably take just a little bit of an issue with when it comes to that is, at least for me, it seems like that cheapens the whole experience. And I don't know how much this episode, it's always kind of up in the air, right? How much this episode is going to play or have an impact on the next episode. But there's something about saying that he physically was there for 2 billion years. He physically fought through this for 2 billion years. He showed that persistence. It was that second in eternity where the bird over every 100 years sharpened its beak on the Diamond Mountain. And then he even says that's one heck of a bird, right? That is who he is. Like he is determined to make it through this. I think to me it would kind of cheapen it just a little bit to say that none of that really happened. Like, yeah, it was a real experience for him, but in the end it didn't have any physical bearing on him as an individual. I think this more than anything has dramatically impacted the Doctor. I think, yeah, he went into the situation wanting revenge. He comes out of the situation wanting destruction. He's just ready. He claims to be the hybrid one way or the other. He wants the ruination of Gallifrey.
So this is going to be another situation of the whole idea that all the thing that was under the blanket, we're going to just disagree. You know,
next episode will show a little bit more.
For me, the idea, I like the storytelling. I like the creativity of it. But for me, the idea of the Doctor literally living billions of years and punching his way through a wall and then kind of bragging on himself at the end, like, yeah, I'm one hell of a bird. That to me is eye rolling. Like not something that I look at and think, oh, wow, that's awesome. That's my Doctor. No, that's like, okay, really? Billions of years? It's just a little too much for me. It's just a little too much. It's a little over the top. I like the idea of the story. I would have liked it much better if it was, even if it had been 1,000 years, you know, something where, you know, there's some hard substance that he had to punch his way through, you know, but the fact that it kept going and then he's looking at the stars and he's like, this many years. And I'm like literally sitting on the couch watching it. Like, come on, guys. Like, you had me at 7,000. You lost me at 1 billion. It's gotten too ridiculous. We're giving this guy too much credit.
He prints a fresh copy of himself. He doesn't realize it's 2 billion years. He's a brand new copy every
he remembers every time he gets to the Diamond Wall, right? He remembers?
Oh, yeah, he remembers then. But then when he reprints a new copy of himself, it's like it's day one all over again.
Dream crabs.
So help me if he wakes up in the Christmas special with dream crabs on his face.
So,
like, oh man, that was horrible.
A couple things. Are you okay with the Doctor being the hybrid?
I am.
Does it make sense to you? Why would he be called the hybrid?
You know what? It's a new concept that I didn't even know of prior than series 9, and I'm pretty sure that's because it's a new concept to series 9. I don't know what to think about it. I'm like you said, how can he, how, what does hybrid even mean in this situation? He's not a hybrid of anything other than a Time Lord that wants the destruction of his own people, which doesn't seem like it's that new either.
Well, they were pretty specific about the idea that the hybrid was going to be half Time Lord, half Dalek. So we know he's not that.
Right.
Then the Doctor kind of was talking about a Shielder being a bit of a hybrid because she was half human, half whatever that species was.
Half other human.
Where they put that.
Could die.
Yeah. So she was kind of a hybrid. And then was there a third thing? I felt like there was something else. But yeah, so it was kind of like, all right, they were kind of misdirecting us with those other things. But now all of a sudden they're saying, oh, the Doctor's the hybrid. But there's really no explanation as to why he would be the hybrid, unless they're going to kind of fill us in on something we don't know yet.
And I'm pretty sure it's going to be that okay. Come the next episode, there's been a few previews for the next episode, and in almost every one of them they have one of the Time Lords making that statement, oh, we thought the hybrid was supposed to be half Time Lord, half Dalek, and then it just kind of cuts away from there. So it's, I have a feeling that they're going to have a bit more of an explanation as to how he's the hybrid. I don't think they're just going to drop it into Heaven Sent and then do away with it from there.
Well, the Doctor did spend some time inside of a Dalek.
He did.
Maybe he got and some he, of that DNA on him.
He understands how they think, right?
What was I going to say? There was the time that the Doctor was considered half Time Lord, half human, from the Eighth Doctor made for TV movie. So I doubt they would go back to that because I feel like that's already been wiped out of canon with some retconning.
Yeah.
But, that would be the only thing I could think of where the Doctor could be considered, you know, half anything. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see, if, you know, kind of like I said earlier, maybe the Doctor is just lying, you know, to say he's the hybrid just to kind of throw them off, but there really is something else that he knows.
If they end up making the Doctor the hybrid, I feel like they're going to have to do some major reframing. They're going to have to make it more in a, I don't know, mental sense, or more in a conceptual sense, not necessarily in a physical sense, like they've been kind of leading us to believe the entire season.
So, what about the concept of the Doctor being too injured to regenerate? Do you buy that, or was that just some, you know, they needed that to be the case for this story specifically?
No, I totally buy that. Don't we have some precedence of that even in the past, of it being mentioned?
Only once I can think of, when Smith was dying on the shores of whatever lake that was.
Lake
Silencio. You know, kind of the idea that he was too injured to regenerate, and that's why they thought that's where he was going to die. Obviously, he doesn't end up dying. And the only thing that, I don't know, I feel like the Doctor, I'm trying to think of other past regenerations. It seems like a lot of it deals with radiation. He ends up regenerating after he gets radiated. but a lot of it doesn't usually have physical injury. But the Seventh Doctor was killed by gunshots. Spoiler alert. and then, well, he was shot, and then in surgery, because they didn't realize he was a Time Lord, they accidentally basically kill him in surgery. And then he regenerates into the Eighth Doctor. I would think that would be another example of where the Doctor would have been too injured to regenerate, but he still did. I thought it was a little bit of a cheat in this situation, especially if he's going back billions of times, that you would think that across those billions of times there would have been something that he did differently that maybe he wouldn't have been so injured. I don't know. The law of averages. You do something a billion times, you're not going to do it exactly the same way. He jumped out that window billions of times. You know, you would think that the situations just would... It would have been more like... I kind of imagine it like Groundhog Day, the movie, where, you know, every time similar events happen, but it's very different. you know, different things, different choices lead to different results. This seemed like he literally did the exact same thing billions of times. It would have been kind of cool to see some variation in maybe some of the things he was doing to make it a little bit more realistic. As realistic as this could be.
The only thing that I would say, I mean, I get the direction that you're coming from, what you're saying. It would be fun to see a little bit of variation in there. The one thing is that at one point in the episode, he says that he's just following someone else's breadcrumbs. Like, it's all been, it's theater for him. And so it's the way that I chalk it up in my mind is that as the doctor, he is just compelled to follow certain things, and he himself knows what he would be most compelled to follow, and those are the clues that he's left behind, and he's just irresistibly drawn to follow those things no matter what.
Do you think that's kind of why
he does the same thing over and over and over?
Do you think the doctor was leaving the clues, or were the Time Lords leaving the clues?
I mean, prior to talking with you, I would say that he was the one that was leaving the clues. But then we had the question of the clothing.
Also the thing that he finds at the bottom of the grave.
Yeah, that's another thing. That
he didn't leave that message.
No.
Or did he?
I think we are supposed to accept that he did.
Oh.
I mean, we're dropped in 7,000 years from when he first started, safe to say. That were 7,000 years from when he first started. So we don't know what he did the first time around. And maybe he cracked some way of leaving things the way that they were. I don't know. But, I mean, it was buried. It wasn't a room. So I don't know. I think we were just supposed to blindly accept that he's the one that was leaving those things for himself to find, similar to Bird in the Sand.
Yeah, I totally. I mean, the bird thing, that made sense that we saw him leave that clue. But I felt like the other things, for me, as I was watching, I was thinking those clues were actually left by whoever set the puzzle for him, which were the Time Lords. That they were kind of this was an elaborate puzzle that they were allowing him in a way to kind of figure out. Interesting. It's just so interesting because I feel like there's so many different ways that you could interpret this. I don't know if they'll ever really clarify it. You know, if are we to believe now that the doctor is billions of years old, or did, like, kind of like my theory, was it just kind of a dream state where very little time passed and he physically didn't go through any of that? I kind of want to know. I need a definitive age.
Well, here's the thing. He wouldn't be a billion years old, would he? Because his body would be the original copy that went into the confession dial.
True. Yeah. Physically, I guess you're right. He would have aged, but he doesn't really age anyways, it doesn't seem like.
He would have 2 billion years of memories.
Yeah, that's true. So even if he only went through it mentally, either way, he's aged billions of years mentally, but not physically.
Yeah.
Good point.
Awesome.
So, one more nitpick. If his skull survived being shocked alive, why didn't the rest of his skeleton? The rest of him disappeared, but his skull survived. So that's my last nitpick.
The hardest bone in your body is your skull.
Is that true?
I thought I it was the femur. I thought I heard that in some boxing movie that, like, when you're boxing, we're using boxing movies
now for biology.
You're always supposed to lower your head so that someone hits the top of your head because it's the thickest, hardest part of your body. But I could totally be wrong there.
Yeah, let's not use boxing movies as the basis for anatomy.
Oh, I use that in all my fistfights that I've never gotten in.
I think, like I said, kind of at the beginning of this episode, I just had a lot of questions. There were things that I felt a little inconsistent. There were things I thought were cheats. There were things I thought were way over the top. I like the overall idea of the story, and I like where it took us. I love the fact that we're back on Gallifrey. I want to know what's going to happen next. And overall, actually, you know, as much as it might sound like I'm kind of being down and nitpicky on this episode, that's just my role in the show. So that's what I'm doing. But I did like the episode. I did. I thought it was cool, especially in the second watching. Great dialogue. Kind of, we've said it earlier in the season, that's what Moffat brings to the table when he writes these episodes. He has the best dialogue for the Doctor.
Yeah.
And some great stuff in this
episode. It just so happened that this one is a monologue.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff, you know, even just little jokes that he'd said from time to time. I like how, you know, the Brothers Grimm, they were on my dart team, I think he said.
Yes,
You know, things like that. You know, great, great script. I loved it. I loved a lot of aspects of it. There were things that, you know, like I said, I did feel like over the top. And it just, a lot of it just depends on, you know, your own perception of the episode. And if the explanation is kind of what I hope it is, I can buy all this stuff. If the explanation is what you think it is, I have some more issues with it. But but no, I'm super excited for the next one.
Yeah, I can't hide it. It's been kind of spilling out through the entire recording or the entire show. But I really like this episode. The only issue I will take with it is that we had to wait until the end of series two for Capaldi to get what I think is Capaldi's defining episode. Like, all the episodes, there were some solid episodes that have come up to this, but the way that he played his part in this episode, the fact that he was by himself, the fact that it was a monologue, this is his best episode at this point. I mean, the next episode very well might blow it out of the water. Who knows? But I feel like Smith, he had us at the 11th hour, right? The moment he shows up in the 11th hour, it's like, oh, wow, this is a cool Doctor. Capaldi, we've been kind of touch and go with him over the Series 8 and Series 9. And here we are, second to last episode of Series 9. And it's like, oh, wow, he is the Doctor. This is solid. I really loved this episode. This is one of those episodes from Capaldi that I will go back and watch multiple times. I've only watched it twice so far, and I feel like I'm just scratching the surface of how much I'm going to enjoy it. But yeah, tops.
Yeah, I think I really like Capaldi as the Doctor. He has a whole different take on the Doctor than the three that we got before him in the modern series. But I really like his take on the Doctor. But I think as this character is really evolving, and I think we've kind of gotten what we're going to get from him, I don't think we're going to see much more growth for this character. I think we know this version of the Doctor. We know what he is, kind of a hugger now, but that's pretty much, you know, the evolution of this Doctor. And I think because they've already defined him, it's solidified him as actually being my least favorite of the modern Doctors. Just because of his attitude. I like the other three guys in the way that they had a little bit more humanity and humility. And I think the fact that Capaldi's version of the Doctor seems very stuck on himself and likes to brag a lot and likes to kind of point out how much more intelligent he is than humans. And that side of him is off-putting enough that it's like, okay, I like this version of the Doctor. I've liked every version of the modern Doctors, but for what I like to see from the Doctor, he is my least favorite of the four.
I don't know if we've seen the full evolution of Capaldi's Doctor as a character. The fact that Clara is dead, to me, feels like it throws everything up in the air. I mean, we're getting Riversong coming back. Who knows what's going to happen in the Christmas episode that further changes the Doctor's character. Capaldi or Moffat has come out and said that he's starting to think about the next companion. That's Capaldi's going to be there with a new companion. And who knows what that companion is going to do for Capaldi's character. I have a hard time feeling that with such a big change that we've just seen in the show overall with Clara now being out of the picture, with how Clara has gone out, the continuing impact that it will have on the Doctor? Does it harden him even more than what we've already seen? Is he even more cynical, or does it soften him? Does it ultimately break him and start to appreciate how fragile humankind is, similar to what Smith, to what the way that Smith approached it, as being a people that he needed to tend to take care of, and not necessarily put down. I don't think we've seen the end of the evolution of Capaldi.
So we've seen the preview for the next episode. And I think the big things that stuck out to me is a shoulder's back, or she's back. And somehow she's on Gallifrey. Right? Are we assuming she's on Gallifrey?
I think she's there.
Okay.
So, she cut a deal with the Time Lords. She got out of Earth.
Yes, so somehow they got sent off into oblivion, but somehow were able to contact her, get her to bring the Doctor somewhere, either into his own mind or into an actual physical miniaturized version of his life. And now she's on Gallifrey, so she found a way there as well. See, she found Gallifrey before the Doctor did.
Gallifrey found her.
Right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that all went down, how she got there. The other thing I think that stuck out to me in the trailer was we see somebody regenerating.
Yeah.
That could be a really, really clever, just, you know, they're just showing us that to be like, oh, wow, like the Doctor's regenerating.
It
could just be a random Time Lord.
They're totally pointing you to the Doctor, because they have all the Time Lords lining up with their rifles and he says fire, and then they show, which is interesting, they show the Doctor looking like he's dying, and it's just for a brief second, and you look in the top corner, someone who's grabbing him, and it's Clara again.
It is.
Yeah, it's Clara again. And then they're like, oh, the regeneration is taking place. So they're totally leading you down the road to think that the Doctor is regenerating, which makes no sense, because we all already have promo pictures for the Christmas episode.
True. Yeah, so we know he doesn't. Although, man, if they had been able to keep that under wraps and they had him regenerate in the final episode into a new Doctor, I would have given them a big, you know, round of applause for being able to keep that one under wraps. Yeah, I think the next episode, it does seem like they might be wrapping up the whole Gallifrey storyline that started with the return of Gallifrey.
Yeah.
I kind of like your theory that Capaldi's back to kind of set things straight in the timeline. As bad, as almost morbid as that seems, because in the 50th anniversary, they made such a big deal about, oh, he's saving kids and families, and then only to have the next Doctor come along and destroy it again. But it's kind of a interesting theory.
One thing along those lines that I'm very curious of is that in one of the promo, I can't remember if it was a picture or a video, it shows Capaldi walking towards a barn that looks very, very similar to the one that the moment was kept in for the 50th anniversary episode. And so is he looking for the moment? Is he just reminiscing about the time that he was a war doctor?
Or is it his family barn that that we saw the little kid sleeping in when Clara grabbed his ankle in Listen?
Maybe he's looking for Clara under the bed. That'd be freaky.
Maybe not looking for Clara under the bed, but that would be kind of a cool tie-in, because we did see an episode where I think it was supposed to be the first Doctor, child version of the first Doctor, sleeping in a barn. So
yeah.
Be interesting. Now, we were kind of wrong about the running time of the last episode. Do we know the running time of this one?
The Heaven Sent?
Of Hellbent.
Oh, Heaven Sent was 54 minutes long. Hellbent, I do not know. I believe it's supposed to be 65 minutes.
Okay. So that's probably just total airtime, including commercials.
I don't know, because Heaven Sent was supposed to be 55 minutes, and Heaven Sent was 55 minutes.
55 minutes without commercials?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we just got that flipped in our last episode. We were talking about running times. I think we had got the times flipped. But so this one is going to be an extra long episode as well.
It should be 65 minutes, a full 20 minutes extra. Yep.
Great. All right. Well, we only have a few weeks to wait. But I think for this review, which I think went longer than most of our reviews.
Wow.
I think we're good to wrap this up.
Sounds good.
All right, man. So as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoy our episodes. And you want to leave us a review, head on over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, search Bad Wolf Radio. We're the ones with the black and white logo. You can send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Probably read your email on an episode if you send it to us. And for now, you can hear us on Shot Glass Digital Podcast Network. And until next time,
later days.